Okay. Today is Monday, June 5th, 2023, and we're continuing yesterday's Zelechot v'Zelechot. You have to rearrange your minds from Shas and Paiskim to the history of Torah. I want to make one small correction, which I think I made a mistake. I was talking last week about Rabbi Lam's family, and they had a very big involvement with Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. And his mother's two brothers were students there. One reached America, Rabbi Harav Yosef Boimel, and he was the first one to build Crown Heights. Today everyone identifies Crown Heights with Chabad. But when he got there, he built the Young Israel, which was a very prominent Young Israel. He built the day school. And the day school becomes very important. It's one of the major day schools in America, the Crown Heights Yeshiva. Young Israel, I may be wrong, he didn't build it, but it was Rav Kanatovsky, and they worked hand in hand. He was rabbi, and I think within the day school, they had their own shul there as well, or vice versa. The shul hosted the day school at first, and he played a very big role. He had a brother, Rabbi, and there... it's Rabbi Yehoshua Baumel. I think I said Rabbi Shimon Baumel. It's Rabbi Yehoshua Baumel. He, if I'm not mistaken, he did not survive the Holocaust. And he and his brother were the early Talmidim of Rabbi Meir Shapiro. And that's the story that my Talmud tells me, Rabbi Mark Dratch. Remember I told you last week that he asked his wife's uncle, Rabbi Yosef Baumel, is it true that you had to know 200 Daf Gemara by heart? And Rabbi Baumel answers him, who didn't know 200? It was everyone, you know. For you American kids, maybe it's a big deal. But for uns und Garische, on the streets of Hungary, Poland, Galicia, we all knew 200 Daf Gemara by heart. Now, and as I've portrayed the Meir Shapiro, I think it's a very honest portrayal, you see. He was revolutionary, he was unique. My comparison between him and Rav Shlomo Riskin, I think it's a very good comparison. And he too suffered in the sense not everyone accepted him. See, we Jews are conservative by nature. And when someone comes along and he changes Maaseh Bereishit, you're not going to fall for him so quickly. And I don't have to just remind you that this was the whole machloket, B'nai Akiva, Mizrahi, Agudat Yisrael. There were many people who felt the Zionist pull, felt the pull Teretz Yisrael, but Mishaneh Maaseh Bereishit, and they were hesitant, and my father, my grandfather, this Rav, that Rav. It's very hard for us to adopt with an A and with a P, with an O, to new circumstances. And this was Reb Meir Shapiro. Now, it was a one-man show. And this, whenever you have a one-man show, it's either up or down. Inevitably, if a one-man show succeeds, it cannot remain a one-man show by definition. You can be a one-man show when you have 20 students, 30 students, 50 students. When you have 100, when you have 200, when you have to multitask, it can't remain a one-man show. And you'll see later today and next week, ultimately, Chachmei Lublin could not remain a one-man show, and it became very hard to find a successor because he, as an individual, combined so many tasks. He was so unique. Very difficult. When you speak about one-man show, underline what I told you last week, and I think I hit the nail on the head. When you go back, if someone will do, again, you have to do an honest biography, a critical biography. I don't use the word critical in the sense of negative, but scientifically. If you do a critical biography of Rabbi Steve Riskin, you'll find that everything he did in America outside of the shul did not continue. It did not go beyond him. It's not on the map today. Ben, did you know that he had a high school for boys, a high school for girls? He was opening a whole Beis Medrash program and a Smicha program. It didn't survive him. Why? Because in America, you don't have that many top quality mechanchim. In America today, in my class, for instance, the brilliant guys, many wound up medical doctors. That was the pull. And I can give you names. I had friends who were, we were all on the same level. We were all hotshots, talmidim of the Rav. But not everyone devoted their life to Torah. They became medical doctors. Today I'm told the business school is the big attraction in YU. I would flunk out if I would be inside Sims. But today it's the big attraction. In America, we don't have enough good mechanchim. And when Pini Bach died, which was you have no idea what a tragic moment that was. These were very bright kids who gathered around Shlomo Lariskin, and he was a tremendous inspiration. And here he brought in Pini Bach. Do you recognize the name Bach? He was the son of Rav Pinchas Bach of Baltimore. Rav Pinchas Bach was a Yudapeish Talmud Chacham who came to America in the late 30s. The Rav, again, if you don't know this, you're missing a whole big hunk of Torah history in America. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, let me take out 2 minutes and explain myself. Rav Moshe Soloveitchik was very unhappy what's happening to the Rav in Boston. Rav Moshe's whole life functioned around his eldest son. Abe, was that good or bad? If you read Shlomit Meisman's memoir, you'll see it's not so good. You have 5 children. But inevitably in life, this son captured him. My wife was always taught me, never favor any grandchild. They're all equal. Some are goyim, some are brighter, some are tzaddikim, some are ordinary Jews. But you have to treat everyone equal. Rav Moshe's life centered around the Rav. And he was very unhappy. The Rav winds up in Boston. He came to America to become Rosh Yeshiva in Chicago. We have all this is documented. Chicago sends a telegram. We don't have money to hire him. We kept our word and brought him here. And now they tell his father, find the shtela for him. So he winds up in Boston. Well, no, the Rav, in retrospect, it was a miracle for anyone in the American rabbinate because you could turn to the Rav and he knew exactly what you're talking about. But here's a man who has the mind of Reb Chaim, his grandfather, as the Dvar Avraham, as Reb Avraham Dovid Shapiro, Kahana Shapiro said about the Rav, the Kovna Rav, the Dvar Avraham. It's the mind of his grandfather, and he's running school in Maimonides on Cholom Moed Sukkos, so the kids should sit in the sukkah and take Dalet Midin. You follow me? This is the level. He's going to the kindergarten. Tova told me this. Going to the kindergarten before Pesach and explaining what matzah is. All right, that's what my son is doing. So by the late 30s, you had this tremendous influx of yeshiva light from Europe, those who were able to get out. And Rav Moshe pleads with Rabbi Revel, let's open a branch in Boston. And technically, it was the first kollel ever opened in America, in Boston. And that's when Binyamin Bach came to America. And he became one of the Rav's. Did you know him from Baltimore? You know him? He became one of the Rav's top talmidim in Baltimore. It was a love relationship between them. Because these were American kids. What did we know? Everyone looked down upon us. The Rav understood he's dealing with a... Here he's dealing with a Yerupeish Talmud Chacham, someone that's been learning since he was 10 years old on a high level. So that was Pinchas's father. And Pini Bach was a fabulous mechanech. He already was an American, and he understood the American mentality, and he was a Talmud Chacham, and he hit it off with Steve Riskin. When Riskin, when he died, there was no one to replace him. And then Riskin went on Aliyah. I would use the word gave up, and there's some truth to that. Here in Israel, it lives on. Why does it live on? Because Baruch Hashem, in Israel, not every good mind goes to be a doctor or goes into business. There are scores of Talmidei Chachamim, Israeli trained, In addition, we have an aliyah. You know how many rabbanim are coming aliyah? We're reaching a point where 40% of the RCA membership lives in Israel today. You can mention all the famous names. They're right here today. So you have a tremendous amount of people to fill the void. And here, whatever Rabbi Riskin built continues b'kavod. Now, that become, and coming back to Boston, I'll tell you what happened, just to fill in the picture. Had Reb Moshe and Rabbi Revel not died suddenly, the Rav might have built an unbelievable kollel in Boston. What happened was, a year after it opened, and it officially, if you go and read my work on Revel, you'll see I cite the document. There was a whole agreement. There was an official branch of Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elchanan. A year afterwards, everyone dies in New York, and the Rav becomes already a commuter, and the kollel is taken over by Rav Moshe's nephew, by the Rav's cousin, by Rav Yechiel Michal Feinstein. Well, it never had the same success it had under the Rav. You can understand that Rav Yechiel Michal Feinstein himself was an immigrant to America, and these people were coming in, wanted to learn, but they wanted to Americanize. The Rav willy-nilly, to use a word the Rav taught me, the Rav willy-nilly was not just Reb Chaim Brisker, but he was Reb Chaim Brisker, as I said yesterday, in the Western world. You follow me, Ben? Reb Yechiel Michal, later he goes to New York and he helps Reb Moshe, his uncle. He's the son of Reb David. He's the son of Reb Moshe's older brother. He helps Reb Moshe, and then they put the heat on him. The Brisker Rav in Yerushalayim, Reb Velvel, wants you as a son-in-law. And then he has to go back to Israel, although I think there was a time when he lived in America with her. You can check it out. I think there was a time when Yechiel Michal Feinstein came back and helped Reb Moshe, and then he went back to Israel. It has to be checked out. But that's the story with the kollel in Boston. It's a fascinating story. My Talmud, Seth Farber, wrote it up. He did a doctorate. He taught in Maimonides. I don't know if you know Rabbi Dr. Seth Farber. He taught in Maimonides, and when he came in Aliyah, he did a doctorate at the Hebrew U in English on the Rav as an educator in Boston. Maimonides, a bit of the Kollel. It's a fascinating doctorate. He stands on my shoulders, he quotes me, and he went a little further. He lived there, he interviewed people. It's a fascinating chapter that has not been properly documented. But see, this is the problem with Reb Meir Shapiro. It's a one-man operation, certainly at the start. And like we said last week, it was unique. Here's a yeshiva with giants of Torah. The Gera Rebbe said to the Maram Shapiro, this is not a yeshiva for students, it's a yeshiva for Goinim. A lot of truth to it. The Hasidic overtones. And we ended off the shiur last week with a story that, you know, you can think about and elaborate. I once pulled a shtick like this on a Saturday night when we were younger and entertained, and, you know, we had good friends. Most of them aren't alive anymore. So one time Saturday night, I quoted from an article in Jewish Observer. I missed the Jewish Observer. It opened the world of Agudat Yisrael to you, the right wing Agudat, the left wing Agudat. It was a fascinating magazine. And Rav Moshe Shapiro, I had an honorary subscription, free of charge, in honor of all that I've done. I brought Agudat into Russia when all is said and done, etc. So I had an honorary subscription. So they had a story about a Rosh Yeshiva Saturday night. The Rosh Yeshiva, he's speaking, he's doing, the students surround him, and they provide a limousine for him, and he comes out of this talk he gave, and surrounded, Baruch Hashem, covered Hatera, and they get into the limo, and they drive a block and a half, and he remembers he left his wife behind. And they turn around, And they have to go back and pick up his wife, and she tells him off in front of the other students in the car. She was fit to be tied. She was furious. And I discussed it. You know, it's an interesting question. Who is right here? Ribbono shel Olam. If I would leave my wife behind a story like this, she'd be ballistic. And can I blame her? What kind of moron are you? It's your wife. Your eshet chaver. It's the mother of your children. She has to put up with all your narishkeit. And you, on the other hand, you're a gadol b'Yisrael. You're involved in lecturing, talking, thinking, answering him. And by the way, yesterday I told Morty, I think it's the first time in 63 years of teaching that I wouldn't answer a question. Remember what happened? I said, I called him, I left him, I answered him, but I wouldn't do it over the recording, over the microphone. And, you know, people are asking you questions. Who's right? Who's wrong? Now, so let the question hang fire. I obviously can understand his wife. I feel for her. What an idiot. Talmidim are Talmidim, but your wife, you leave her behind? All right, Natan Shalom Bayit, you'll learn how to behave. We ended off the class last week with an unbelievable story. Rav Meir Shapiro, and not even realizing that it was the last Yom in the Rhyme of his life, he asked the students not to go home for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. And you're dealing with 40% of the yeshiva with Gerach Chassidim. No, is anyone here a chassid? Not to go to the Rebbe for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? And boy, they were caught in the quandary, they were caught in the quagmire. What do? Do you listen to the Maram Shapiro? Or do you say, sorry Rebbe, we got to go to the Gerach Rebbe? Wow. And that was the way we ended the class. And the memoir literature, this is all, anything I'm saying, I'm not making up. It's the interviews that Rabbi Slavin, Dr. Slavin, did with survivors of Chachmei Lublin 30 years ago. You had who to talk to. And they start out towards the Gera Rebbe. And suddenly, tremendous rain, and the wagon, one of the wagons they're in, breaks down. So some take it as a sign, Min Hashamayim, go back. And others say, no, God is just challenging us to see if we're really loyal to the Gera Rebbe. Now, and that's the Maram Lublin. You can understand in a Litvishi yeshiva, you wouldn't have a problem like that. Where the students, of course, they'd be there, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the Mashkiach, the Shmuasin. I remember in Lakewood, there were students who had a tiny dibur from Rosh Chodesh Elul to Motzei Yom Kippur. I saw that with my own eyes. All right, this is Musa. Is it normal? This is one of the big problems with the Musa movement, if you recall my lectures. But It was a sight to see. They would only talk in learning if they needed a Gemara, something different Kedusha. But there's memoir literature, Professor Ginsburg, Louis Ginsburg of the seminary. Remember, I spoke about this 20 years ago, perhaps. Louis Ginsburg, he didn't begin at the seminary. He was in Eloy in Telz. And his mother comes to visit him in Aseret Yemei Tshuva, and he won't speak to his mother. He's in a tiny dibur. Louis Ginsburg. Understand? This is Louis Ginsburg of the seminary. With all that implies, I mean, he got involved with biblical criticism. Later in life, I understand he regretted some of his extreme movements. But I don't know if there's anyone alive, Hashem Torah Mitzvah, among his descendants. His son was a big professor at Columbia. I don't know how much he observed. And when you pull away, it's very sad. This was Louis Ginsburg. There are legendary stories about him. He ate swordfish, which he ate shall meal the smoke. It could go, it goes back to the Noda, if you're aware of all the literature. But he was Louis Ginsberg. He wouldn't talk to his mother during a Sochem Eid Shabbat. Now, I want to go a step further, and here I'm telling you something which, for me, is very emotional and brings back a lot of memories, and I have to say it's part of yesterday's shiur, rupture and reconstruction. One of the most fascinating points that my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, makes is when he was growing up in Boston, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur had come to shul, here were Jews, emigrants. Their davening was indescribable. The tears, the kavanah, and they were davening like they davened in the Alter Heim, Slabatka, Tells, Ashtetl, unbelievable. And he says many of them weren't even Shomer Shabbos. You looked at the American kids who were from or became from or Balei Tshuva, they davened. They were Shomer Shabbos. But the davening didn't hold the candle to these old timers. And see, this is the rupture and reconstruction right before your eyes. One of the Talmidim, a number of Talmidim, he cites here in the footnotes, and it seems there was a video done by a YU graduate, Menachem Daum, who did the one on Borough Park, A People Apart. It's on YouTube today. It was done more than 20 years ago. It's a YU graduate. And from Guy, I'm 1,000%. There's another video, they visit Europe, and he puts a kvittel, where me, yeshiva, whatever, and his son, who's a litvaker, and he grew up not in YU, but with no Hasidic feeling, his son says, I'm recording what my father is doing, but I want to go on record that I disagree with the stupidity. What's a kvittel? What's the da kvittel? What does it accomplish? So he interviews people, and they say, when the Maram Shapiro davened for the Yomid, Tfilat Geshem, he would go to the main shul in Lublin. It was the Chozer HaLublin davened there. And everyone knew the man. Maram Shapiro had a beautiful voice, and he brought a choir with him. There was one of his unterfuhrers, Yankala Haas. Do you remember growing up, cantor Jacob Haas? He survived. And remember that name, Elliot? Wow. He was from Maram Shapiro's Talmidim. He was a frum chazan at a time when chazanim fell korim and yom kippur, and under the talit they ate a sandwich. And he was a frum chazan. And he would go and do tefillat geshem. And a crowd would come, and the crying, what went on in the shul, the women, Now, you know why I gave you that whole introduction? I grew up in the Bronx. My grandfather was a typical shul. He had a fight here, a fight there. So my earliest shul was Zeri Yaakov on Washington Avenue. There was one shul after another. Later, my grandfather switched to Arthur Avenue, Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Berlin. There was an old, a big building built like a shul in Europe, must have been built in the 1880s, 1890s, with upstairs the women. And I remember Tfilat Geshem, the women were crying. And there was a real Tfilat Geshem. Abe, you haven't said Tfilat Geshem from the time you set foot in Israel. Remember, you ever open up a mark there from Hebrew Publishing Company? You know how many pages of piyut there are there? On Tfilat Geshem alone, I'm willing to bet you'll find 10 pages, maybe more. No, when's the last time you said it? I came on Aliyah to Israel, they don't daven here. The Beipashit don't daven here. Hey, finished. Three stances of a piyut, and that's it. Finished. They don't daven here. I'm a lamed schut, because we don't have a Sunday. So Shabbos seer, Yom Tovah, you got to visit, you got to do, you have to see, you have to go here, everywhere. Who has time to daven? It's a pleasure. I use my time learning, I admit that. I've been davening a sip. People ask me, you've gone through Shastas a third time with the Rishonim and the Rambam. I say, yeah, I never davened. Shabbos morning, 6:30, 8 o'clock, we're making Kiddush. 53 years I'm at that minyan. And it's a hush of a minyan. I can tell you a list of Gedolei Yisrael who davened 6:30. But in America, Europe, and these women, when I think back to Yeshivat Rabbeim Chaim Oiza, I even remember the name, one of the women, she was president of the Ladies Auxiliary, Rebecca Strauss. I don't think any woman had a child who was Shomer Shabbos. There might be one or two, maybe Halavai, I'm wrong. Totally assimilated. I remember Rabbi Rosen, who was a Yid Mitalanga Bud, a guy who knew all of Shas, wrote Sfarim. I remember helping him donate them to YU's library. I don't know what became of it. The handwritten manuscript, volumes and volumes. This, who, kid, when, where? And yet, when these women said Tfilat Geshem, it was Geshem in the synagogue. And this was the Maram Shapiro. He could go and daven, and the Talmidim, 50, 60 years later, what do they remember? The Tfilat Geshem of the Maram Shapiro, the tears. And this is rupture and reconstruction. I think Chaim described it so beautifully. And we have to live with it. This is the reality. Ein hachinami. We can't get angry. I told you yesterday, I get upset with the matzah has to be this big, the lettuce has to be this big. You measure it. Measuring alone is a shayla, the bar mitzvah, or you can come out with all types of heterim. But this is the reality. If you didn't see your father and you didn't see your grandfather, rupture, and you have to reconstruct. Okay. But now I want to go one step further, and we come to what I said 20 minutes ago. Hold on one second. Rabbi Rubin, you got my message? Your phone. I called your phone yesterday, your house phone, and I left the message. I answered your question. So please pick up the message and you'll have the answer. And you'll understand why I didn't want to do it for thousands to listen. Okay, back here. Look, with all the good intention in the world, Bernie Lander organizes Turo. You can't be a one-man operation. It's impossible. Classes, faculty, students, money, budget. Bernie Lander's genius, whenever YU created problems for someone, Bernie Lander picked them up. And he picked up tremendous talent. Lander College today, their faculty, the most famous Rosh Yeshiva, many of them are YU products. The biggest problem with the Maram Shapiro was the money problems. You organize a yeshiva, you have a budget, all right, you can raise money to build a building. You put plaques up, you reward people, etc. But then you have an operating budget. And an operating budget, you can't give people honor. It's not that you can put a plaque on the wall that Ben Turin donated $1 million for this room. There's rooms here. I think the next room next to here, there was a big donation made to Torah Tshraga, and you'll see there's a sign up that the room is dedicated in honor of a certain family. Operating budget is the killer. And he soon needed help. He soon needed assistance. Administratively, giving Sheyurim, he could have managed. But the Makaba Patish was the constant struggle to meet the budget. And here you come to a very big name. It's not a lasting name. You'll see what happens. There's a name we're going to come to afterwards that second to the Maram Shapiro was totally identified with Yachal. But this individual, Reb Shimon Engel, Shimla, as he was called, Reb Shimla, becomes a legendary figure in the early years of Yachal. How did the Maram Shapiro pick him up? There are about three different versions circulating. He has them all. He has all the versions. How do you pick him up? Okay, who was he? Who was this person? Born in 1876 in a small shtetl in Poland. Kid was a genius. His father was a Kuznetser Chassid. And there were problems in the house. His mother died young. The father remarried. For reasons, I'm quoting the doctorate now, that we are cannot be sure of, this young kid left home and went to the Kuznetser Rebbe's court, where he lived for many years. Now, logically speaking, and some of the people he interviewed said that this was the real reason. See, when a husband remarries, when there's a when you have a blended family, an intelligent husband, an intelligent wife, a second marriage, you blend the children in. Elliot, where were you raised? What community? You know anything about Queens? Give me an example of the most prominent rabbi in Queens had the most beautiful blended family. Rabbi Fabian Schoenfeld. His first wife was Chief Rabbi, the Lord Jacobowitz's sister. She died young of that damn cancer. There was a woman, Ruth, I believe in Brooklyn. Her husband was a Hasidic Yid with big Hasidic Yichis, a survivor, and he was a businessman. And if I recall correctly, Saturday night they flew out to South America during the winter. There was plenty of time to get to LaGuardia, flew out to South America. Business people, import, export. A lot of survivors did very well in that business, from people. I know some of them became my own friends, my own devotees. I taught their children, etc. Helped me with Shvatami. And the plane went down in the channel, not even in the Atlantic Ocean, but before you hit the heart of the ocean. And I don't know if the bodies were recalled. I remember it was a big shiva with Aguna, etc., etc. Anyway, Ruth and Fabian married Pacific Shani, and I think they each had four children, and they had one set of twins together, giving them 10 children. And I remember I taught, if I'm not mistaken, two Debbies in the family, two sisters with the same name. It was a totally successfully blended family. You couldn't know that these weren't sisters and brothers. You follow? And I had this good. I taught many people in the family. Some picked me up via YU Torah afterwards. Many live in Israel. It's a fascinating. Some of the family went back to Fabian's root. Gera Hasidim became Gera. It's a fascinating story. It's worth a volume, cheaper by the dozen, something here. The rabbi and Rebbetzin of a dozen, something like that. So, you see, that can work out. But when you marry a lady who was never married before, at times she can say, I want no part of your children from the previous marriage. So it seems he had a problem with his stepmother. And he went to the Rebbe's court. Another version says he went to the Rebbe's court. It was a bigger city. He was unhappy in this little shtetl, and you can probably merge the versions together. But in Kuznets, in the Rebbe's shtibl, he sat and learned, and he mastered Kol HaTorah Kula. Now, how does he come to the Maram Shapiro? One version is, and I can't tell you which is correct, he brings three different versions. I like the one in the footnote best of all, but I'll get to that last. One version is that, like everyone else, he wanted to see Mati Boshel Ubezer. What did the Maram build? What's this yeshiva? Yachach Me Lubim. Everyone's talking about Yachal. What is Yachal? So he comes to the yeshiva, and some of the boys knew of his reputation, they said, V'decherem, give us a shtickle teira, let's hear something from you. And he starts speaking, the Maram Lublin walks in, and here's this man, he's blown away. A second version is that the Maram Lublin was visiting the yeshiva, one of the big Chabad yeshivat in Poland, in this area. And he walks into the yeshiva, and Reb Shimla is working there. He's the mashgiach. He has an official position there, and he goes to hear him speak, and he's blown away. A third version is that the Maram Shapiro, and this third version makes sense, he realized he needed help. He realized he couldn't carry the burden alone. He needed someone, not to help him financially, that was the area that only he could do because he had all these contacts, but that should be able to give a shir and be able to give a shmuis. He needed help. So he published an advertisement in one of the Hasidic newspapers, and he asked an applicant to write to him stating why he believed he was suitable and what areas of Torah they were well versed. So Rabbi Engel wrote he was an expert in Bavli, Yushalmi, Medrash, Zoha, Sifrei Maharal, and Sifrei Hasidut. When Rav Meir Shapiro received this letter with what this youngster is writing, he thought it was a joke. Who could know so much? So he contacted the Chabin Rav, Dov Beresh Wiedenfelder. Chabin Rav was a Shem Dover later. I can show you the house he lived in Israel. He lived around the corner from where BMT began. Ibn Shatrut, mamish around the corner, Pinat Ababanel. And in that house, they build the mikveh in the basement. Is the mikveh still there today? Has anyone checked? You don't know.
It's not operating.
Not operating. They built the mikveh in the basement for the Chabinaros. And Adam Gadol, Gadol Shabakatayim. And he was very, when Shulam Rav came in Aliyah, when they would get together, it was like Abaye and Rabbi getting together, Goinim, Goinim, and some idiot said to the Chibina, but as a Mizrachist, you understand, and the Chibina, he said, we're not anything, we're two kids back in the Altaheim together. Ah, what gedolim, what gedolim. So Rabbi Shalom Roth, by the way, became very popular in the Koma Vaseh, the whole question of Hallel and Yom Ha'atzmaut. He has one of the famous tshuvot, say Hallel with the bracha. His life was saved because he was a Zionist. Had he not been a Zionist, he would have been, if there was a big shtela open and they only wanted an anti-Zionist. It was in hands Aguda and beyond Aguda, and they wouldn't select him. Had they selected him as Rav, he would have been wiped out by Hitler. Because he wasn't selected, and where he was able to get away and with miracles coming aliyah. Now, so he turns to the Chabina Rav, and he asks, do you know this person? Can you verify what he's writing? And the Chabina Rav answers him, this is what he wrote, das is no miksat shvachav. He's only telling you a little bit about himself. And so there's three versions. One, he wandered into the yeshiva to see what's going on. One, Rav Meir Shapira visited Lubavitch in Warsaw. They had a big Tomchei Tamimim, and he heard him speak. And the third one, he applied for the position, and he became a very dominant, beloved figure. And you can understand why. First of all, his Hatmada was legendary. Listen to this. This is all based on interviews. Every morning before Shacharit, he had already studied the weekly Parsha with all its commentaries, including the Zohar. 7 pages of Gemara, 18 chapters of Mishnah. Okay? I boast that I come to Minyan in the morning, I've done at least 1 page of Dat Mikra, 1 Mishnah, 1 page of Mishnah Brura, and I started my Gemara for the day. I can't finish, don't have time. I've got a minyan. That's what I'm boasting about. You idiot, that's an accomplishment? Look what Rav Shmuel did. And then he goes to daven. My davening, my minyan. I haven't said Kedusha in more than 50 years with the morning Shacharis minyan. I guess where either I'm davening longer or davening faster. I can't answer you. Wow. He davens 4 hours. 4 hours. And more than that, he had a special vort, special admiration for the Maharam Shapira. What I'm telling you now, if you understand me, it's the key to understanding Hasidut, where a Litvak like myself differs. He used to tell the students, you think you know the Maharam Shapira? What do you praise him for? His lamdas, his chassidus. I have another praise for him. His total hitbatlut, self-negation, self-nullification to the Chetkova Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Friedman. And here we come to a very fascinating little topic that has troubled me at least 50 years, more than 50 years. I'll come back to Bab Anol 24 in a minute. Tell me, a Rebbe, Tzadkiv a Rebbe, had a tremendous amount of chassidim. Second only to the Gera Rebbe in Poland, pre-World War II. We've spoken about him many times, of Israel Friedman. Who was the great alumni? Who was the great alumni? The Maharam Shapira or the Tzadkiv a Rebbe? I don't have to answer. Ram Shapiro, Golan Adia, Svarim, Shelet Meshuvah, published. Chatka Vareba, all right, the Kedusha, Batara. Beautiful Ken, Rebbe Lerin. How much? And you see, this is the secret of Chassidut. Something a Litvak has difficulty understanding. Come to a Bab Anol 24. Let's go back in time. You don't remember Bab Anol 24, Abe? No, it's before your time in BMT. Elliot, you remember?
Oh, yeah.
Oh yes. Beryl and Norm? Absolutely. He knows what I'm talking about, don't worry. They were classmates. Tell me, do you remember there was a lady who worked there, one of the ladies, I forget her name, her mother was married Bezivik Sheni to Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin. No? Anyone remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember the lady, a nice looking lady with a shetel, I remember a dark shetel, and her mama, was widowed. Rabbi Yosef Shlomo was widowed, and they were married. And he used to talk about her mother's father. And I knew who Rabbi Shlomo Yosef Zevin was. I had the schut. I actually met him and spoke of him. Rav Chutner was his right hand, my neighbor, Rav Yeshua Chutner. And tell me, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, the man knew Kol HaTorah Kula. Familiar with his writings? Moadim B'Halacha, that alone, what godlet, what knowledge. La'oha Halacha, he writes about Shakespeare. And in the light of halacha, I mean, the man, unbelievable what one human being could know. And he was totally mevatel himself to the sixth Rebbe. He grew up a chassid of the Riatz. Now, can you understand that, Ben? Tell me in Lakewood, when the Baron died, did your father ever reveal to you what the top students felt about the continuity there? I'll tell you after class. We don't have to publicize it. I'll tell you what these ears and eyes heard and saw. A litvak. But you see, Rav Shlomo Yosef, that he was mevatel himself to the seventh Rebbe, that I can understand a little bit easier. You with me, Vic? I don't want to give out grades. But that's kind of chvashtein. Seventh Rebbe was something one of a kind in the 20th century. But the sixth Rebbe, that's Hasidus. And I remember then already asking this question. Malitvak. In parentheses, I just want to tell you one step further. Just it should be recorded for history. When the early 70s, they got out Jews from the Soviet Union. It wasn't like the 1990s, but there were a nice few thousand. Maybe even more than 10,000. Check the statistics. One of the Jews they got out was Reb Shlomo Yosef Zevin's younger brother. And here they were like 20 years between the brothers. And he knew nothing of Yiddishkeit. Totally raised under the communists. And comes to Israel and they want to show him who his brother is. And Rav Chutner arranged with President Shazar, who had returned to his Chabad roots, Shmuel Zalman Rubishov, Shazar, they arranged a Kabbalat Panim in honor of Rav Yosef Shlomo Zevin, and they invited his kid brother who had just arrived, and it was the president and other very important people. Yours truly was invited through his neighbor, Rav Yeshua Chutner. And I mean, I saw, and, you know, the younger brother like was mesmerized. He didn't know who his older brother was, but he had become the president, honoring him. And I remember Shazar spoke, Chaval, it wasn't recorded, like a Chabad Rav, filled with Maimari Chazal, Tanya, Sichat, Sipurim from the Rebbe. But you see, Rav Shlomo Yosef Zevin, I couldn't believe I'm meeting him, I'm talking with him. And total hitbatlut to the Rebbe. Yomo, give me another example that I experienced in my life. Charlie, did you ever hear of Reb Menachem Kasha? Reb Menachem Kasha, what that man published, what that man accomplished with the Midrashim and the Chidushim and the Tshuvah, the Divrei Menachem and the Haggadah, no, and Tshuva HaGadolah. So he was in America many years. The whole era of today in America, in Manhattan, is a result of Reb Menachem Kasha. And when he came back to Israel, you know, his whole life was Warsaw to Israel, to America, back to Israel. He spoke to nobody. Why? he wanted to finish the Torah Shleima, which he never finished. His family finished it, actually. You never finish a work like that, an all Chamisha Chumshei Torah, an encyclopedic work. Otzah Goinim was never finished. Bikvukei Sofrim was never finished. You can't. You're just one human being. Can't. The problem is when there's not another human being like you who can take over what you've started. So he did. But how did I get there? Twice I got to speak to him. How? David Silva, Rabbi David Silva of Harrisburg, would visit Israel. He wanted to speak with Rav Menachem Kasha. Rav Menachem Kasha couldn't say no to Rabbi Silva because his father, Reb Lazer Silva, raised the money to publish the early volumes of the Torah Shleima. And Reb Menachem Kasha told me that it was only Reb Lazer Silva who understood me, what I wanted to do. When I first spoke to him and nothing existed, he saw the vision of what will be. And here's another example. Reb Menachem Kasha, Agon Shebega Einim, Agera Chasid. I don't know. Who knew more? The Sfat Emet, Reb Avraham Mordechai Dura'im, the Sfat Emet's son. These were his rebbeim. Reb Yisrael, who built Gera in Israel, succeeded Dura'im 1948, hit Bat Lut. And this is an amazing comment on the Maram Shapiro, Reb Shlimele Engel, I should say. You Talmidim, Derech Eretz, and understand the Maram Shapiro, but there's something in him which you don't even start to comprehend. His total hit bat lut bifnei the Chotkeva Rebbe. Fascinating comment. And I have to tell you, as a Litvak, I can't understand it. I've often said no one, you know, I honor people, I act nice. Sometimes I'm thinking to myself, Azam Oritz, such a bore. But all right, you gotta be nice. But someone can learn better than me, I'll tie his shoelaces. I'll fall on the ground in front of him. You understand me? That's a Litvak. Oh, Ekin Larin. And I saw that in the Rav. With all the Rav's hashkafah, I told you this many times, it's one thing I'm an eyewitness to. I remember at an RCA convention, I'm a guest from Israel, and I'm happy to see Rebbe again and talk with him and be complimented by him. The last time I spoke with him was 69, and I'm taking a Birchat Preidah. He said, how will you make a living? 77, I come back, and he didn't ask me how I make a living. I said, Rebbe, I don't know. I barely make a living. I don't know how I survive. But yeah, I hear wonderful things about what you're doing. All right, Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. But I remember one of the big shots in RCA, his son was learning in Lakewood. And the Rav turns to the father, the son. Later in life, I had a lot of interaction with the son. He became an Av Beit in Florida and with Gerit. I once, with a divorce, I once saved the Mamzerit issue. I had a document which I published in Chelik Daled, or Chelik Gimel, Rakofet Aron. That document saved some lives. And he asked me, I made it available to him long before I published it. It's no longer alive. So the Rav says to his father, it's a pleasure to speak with him in learning. He knows how to learn. Rebbe, he didn't go to college. He barely graduated high school. No bachelor's, no master's, no doctorate. But you see, can learn him, that's the basis. That's what counts. Everything else, icing on the cake. You with me, Morty? That's the difference. Okay. Now, Coming back to the Maram Shapiro and Reb Shlomo and Reb Shimola, I should say. His name was Shimon Engel. Engel was a very famous rabbinic family in Galicia, in this section of Hungary, bordering on Poland. Very famous family. And he was something very special. And he fought with the Maram Shapiro on a derech and learning. And here there's a beautiful quote from his Talmud, and they quote word by word. And what were they fighting about? And here you come to the Hasidic Litvische chasm, which we're never going to heal totally. In we who grew up in the Litvische Welt, believe me, it's a miracle that I could give the shir I gave yesterday or will give next Sunday, Bezrat Hashem. Who taught us halacha? Who taught us how to dig deep into the halacha? No, you learn the sugi, you learn the Rambam, you have to understand the Rambam. And halacha and ma'aseh played very little role in the Litvische world. The Chassidic world, as you know, kids of 12 were learning chulin. It's halacha and ma'aseh. How do you shecht? How do you moleach? How do you do the salting process? How do you wash off the meat? All the halachot. Where did you ask the shayla? What's a treifa? Now, the Maram Lublin was sort of in the middle, but still the stress was on the fishi tato, that lumdis and the sheeter and the viewpoint, and it connects with every gemara. Wherever they say something, you can show the connecting link. Reb Shimola, here, I'm quoting him now. Please tell me, Rabbi of Lublin, your students study Kodshim. They are clear in Zvachim and Menachat. They deliver Pshetlach, full of Harifus. They build and they dismantle. They quote Rishonim and Achronim. But Maram Shapiro, I would like to know one thing. Is there among them one who can tell me in all the details how one constructs a korban mincha, which is the most basic of the offerings in the Beit HaMikdash? And you see, korban mincha, how do you make it with all the lumdus? How much meal? How much flour? How much oil? How do you construct it? How do you mix it? How do you prepare it? And see, there's a world of difference between these stories. Now, remember the letter that supposedly Shimola sent to the Maram Shapiro, and he mentions he's a master of the Maharal. See, what does that mean? If you know the Maharal Shita thinking, he took Pirkei Avot very seriously. A certain age you start Mikra, a certain age you start Talmud. Everything has to be very basic. I began learning Gemara, I was fifth grade. Maral's viewpoint, much, much later. Master Tanakh, Master Mishnah. Only when you're above Bar Mitzvah, a teenager, then you can begin studying Gemara. Do it all, halacha lemaisa. Know how to live a Jewish life. Can anyone tell me where the Maral Shita is alive and kicking and living today? Nu Yomo, the old city, the Zilbermans, the Zilbermanim. Zilberman, the history is very simple. Do you know the story or not? The original Rabbi Zilberman was a descendant of the Vilna Gaon's family. He wound up in England. He did a translation, by the way. It's a two-volume English translation of Rashi. It didn't catch on like the American translation. The American translation is easy to use. It's five volumes. The type is larger. But people say that the Zilberman one is better. But the problem is it's the type. It's small. It's not as easy to use as the American one. And he opened up that whole Talmud Torah, that whole system in Israel, the Zilbermanim, Mamish the Maral, Rab Shimon Engel would be very pleased with the Zilberman method of teaching. That method has been copied to a certain degree, you'll find also in the Talmud Torahs, within the Mamlachti Dati system, the religious Zionist system. So for the various elements in the Mizrahi world, Ben, you didn't understand what Hadalim meant, Haredim Datiyim Le'umiyim. You see, Mizrahi underwent a sea change. 70 years ago, 60 years ago, in the Mizrahi world, you barely found a woman who covered her hair. You barely found a woman who didn't wear sleeveless or cap sleeves, I think they're called. The Mizrahi world changed. You have the more observant, that's what they refer to, Chadalim, Charedim, Dapim, Lumim, Hamor is the example. Smutridge, they hold as an example. The Mizrahi world changed, but the original Mizrahi world was not as frum as it is today. A good was from a Hasidus. Today in the Mizrahi world you have Neo Hasidus, whoever dreamt in the Yeshiva Hester. Some of them want more than just the regular Mamlachti Dati school. They want Torani. Some of them want more than Torani. They call it a Talmud Torah. And it's religious Zionist, but they will be more medayek. Some of these, let the kid chumish first, Mishnah, Gemara begin later. Let him mature, let him understand. And this was the Maralmi Prague, and this was Reb Shimla Engel. You don't give Pshetlach, and you don't give Pilpul. The main point of learning is halacha lemaisa. How do you bring a mincha? How do you bring a korban? All right, there's a lot to be said for this. Now, beyond this, there's another level of the relationship of Reb Shimla with the students in Chachmei Lublin. And here too, we come to an interesting point where I have to admit, as a Litvak, I am guilty. And what am I talking about? Reb Shimla, besides his knowledge, besides his learning, besides his Sheyurim in Gemara, Halacha Lemaisa from the Gemara, besides his Sichot, he was a very powerful storyteller. And they called him, his students referred to him as a brilliant Hasidic storyteller. And you see, in the Hasidic world, this becomes very fundamental. A Hasidic Maisa, a Fabrengen, Hasidim come together, come from a Fabrengen. You'll see, you're going to a shtibble, and they drink a lechayim, and they'll start telling stories about the Rebbeim. All right, a Litvak looks at it, what are you doing? What is the Litvak? What are you accomplishing? But if you take the Hasidic stories from the Baal Shem Tov on, the theme is not to be haughty, to be humble. And these stories have an impact. A Hasid tells a story, it opens his heart, opens his mind, and if you have any intelligence, you realize that story about the Rebbe is talking about you. Go home and be decent to your wife, be decent to your children. Don't be haughty, be humble. And tell me, do we Litvakin have that trait? So here I want to tell you, I want to plead guilty. My wife comes from a Hasidic background, and from her father it's Belz. Hazay, the one showed me pictures of himself, Belz, Yingel, Langer, Payish, Bamish Belz, where he was born. On her mother's side, it's Meshbitz, Grushin, that descends from Grushin, Meshbitz, and no, good Hasidic Yidden. We got to remember, my wife's family is in America since 1870s, and a good part of the family has remained from. There must be hundreds and hundreds of direct descendants living a lot Mata Kodesh, 99% Shema Torah and Mitzvah. So you got to give credit. So I remember I told you Saturday night we'd get together. My wife, myself, the Alberts, the Marcuses, the Applebaums, not David, it's Rabbi Applebaum, Louis and his wife. And if the Sladowskis were visiting from America, they would join us. And there we would be telling one story after another about the Rav. And my wife would tell me afterwards, you sounded like a bunch of chassidim, fabrengen, mit a bissel schnapps, and the way you're talking about the Rav, like a chassid. And I have to say, I plead guilty. The stories you hear, I don't know, it just turns me into I hope to be a good Jew. I'll give you one story of the Rav. If this isn't Hasidus, tell me what is. The Rav, later in life, broke with the tradition of his family after his wife died, and he visited the cemetery regularly. So one time, before Rosh Hashanah, he's on the cemetery. I went to the cemetery to ask Mechila from the Rav that I was going to publish about him. Who am I? What am I? The two volumes. So here I am. I know the cemetery. And Jews are coming to say Kel Mole, Fala Shoshana. And the Rav is walking away from his wife's tombstone. And these Jews come over to him. Reverend, could you help us say the right prayers? And he walks with them to the tombstone. And he says to Kelmole, and he's ready to walk away, wishes them a good yontif, and they shove a $20 bill in his hand. And he says, no, it's not necessary. And he gives it back. He won't take it. And he walks. And the driver's waiting for him, his Talmud. He gets into the car, and they pull away. Someone saw this on grounds of the cemetery and walked over and says to these people, do you know who just said the prayer for you? And they say, no. Thought he's a reverend, you know, who hangs out at the cemetery. I remember this as a kid. Reverends would hang out all over Mount Hebron, Queens, pick up a few dollars helping people say a prayer. And they say no. And he says, do you know that may be the greatest rabbi alive? And these were Reformed Jews. He tells them. That Sunday, they come to Maimonides with a check for $20,000 in honor of the Rav. Now, I may be wrong on the sum of money, but the story is absolutely true. I don't know if I recorded it, I spoke about it. It's not in the Rav, because the Rav is stories that the Rav told about his family, not about himself. But I told this story many times. I know I've seen it in writing as well. But you see, this is a Hasidic story. It opens your heart. It warms your heart. The Rav, just overwhelming, the decency. And you remember what I quoted yesterday, where the Rav says, you want to be machmir, you know, the new generation? Be machmir in two areas. Don't speak Lashon Hara and Rechilat. And give more tzedakah. Those areas, he says, everywhere else, if you want to be made killed, be made killed. That's what he tells Rabbi Aaron Adler. So you see, there's something to be said for these stories. And You can see already where there's a little bit conflict here. I'll take you further. Reb Shlomo, excuse me. I'll take you further. What was one of the big problems in Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin? The world's looking at it. Torah Jews looking at it. You see, you come back to the problem we mentioned in class a few weeks ago. Pat b'melech tochal. Is it a chiyuv to live like that? Or is it if you have no choice? But you see, Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, luxury like that didn't exist in any shtibel or yeshiva in all of Eastern Europe. Who heard of constructing a building so large with everything in it? A tremendous mikveh, a model of the Beis HaMikdash, a kitchen, a dining room, full size, endless lecture halls, a shul, dormitory rooms. So a kid, Reb Shlomo felt there's an inherent danger. A kid who's exposed to this would become arrogant, self-centered. His values would shift. And he gave plenty of musa criticizing the luxury they find themselves in Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin. And I can understand this very well. I think I've told you many times, and I write this as well, that I got one gift out of Bnei Akiva that I did not get out of any yeshiva. Not YU, not Lakewood. The ability to not allow money to be your gold, to bribe you, to entice you. And I have to say, I understand Reb Shlomo Eigel very well. And that I got out of an Akiva. YU, everything is goal-oriented. You see YU today, they advertise 95% of our graduates are working for world-famous companies with their graduation. Why did all the kids become doctors in my time? A doctor made a fine living. Today, it's not the doctor. Today, business, investments, all right, who knows how long it'll last. I saw today headlines in the Post that the stock market in America is too high. When is it going to burst? When will the needle be put in? But you see, money, money. Lakewood, I don't have to tell you the problem Lakewood has. As many young girls have said, our tragedy is that our fathers listened to their Rashi Yeshiva in Lakewood. They gave up going to college, don't make a living. We want a Lakewood boy like our fathers. Boys come along and say, no tiki, no washi. We can't make a living. We're going to sit and learn. We want a girl who can give us a beautiful house, furnished, a car, luxury. How can the girl supply it? You follow me, Ben?
I don't think fairly representing the reality.
Yeah,
about a minority.
But I know it's enough of a minority that it's all over the place on Yeshiva World News and elsewhere, and they say it's a serious problem. I know it involved Israel, that Rav Montesio Solomon came here to, don't want to go into detail, it's not Lekavod Hadava, but told off for Pan Kenevsky.
That was a different point. That was about the advert that they should take girls' money from the single girls and promising them shidduchim.
To give tzedakah, yeah.
But
wait a minute. But they say the single girls were desperate because no one, they don't have enough to entice, to attract. All right, I hope you're right. I hope I'm wrong.
There's a numbers problem. And there's a shidduch crisis because there's a numbers problem.
No. All right. I hope you're wrong, but I can tell you I'm quoting people from within.
Every society is an issue. People like affluence. If you're not wealthy,
yeah, but you see in Bnei Akiva and in the Mamlachti Dati world here, These youngsters are fabulous. I can only tell you, I saw how my grandchildren married, and each one is such fabulous wives. Money was never a factor.
Criticism never. Of America more than of labor, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's more than it's
if
more.
Criticism of materialism in America.
American. All right. I hope, but all I can tell you is that quote that my father listened to his Rebbe, and that's why I have a problem, is not my quote. I'm quoting what I saw in writing, saw on the screen, unless it's false news, but I doubt it because I see.
I know. I've heard the quote also. It was the Tamim Yeshiva. I don't want to say publicly the name. It was at a convention of the Tamim of Yeshiva, and it was made by someone in Chinuch, and got up and he said to his Yeshiva, "Why are you encouraging your Tamim to look for money? Now I can't manage my own daughter."
That's exactly the quote I heard, basically. Okay, anyway, let it be a general problem, but I heard it in relation to Rabarin and Lakewood and what he established and what's being copied, but I have to say that this problem was, there is something to it, and I can understand the similar angle giving Musa. Don't be overwhelmed by the Olam Hazeh type of life that we have here in Yachal. You have to be humble, and sometimes it's good to understand Pat B'melech Tochal. And here too, there were divergent feelings. And it did, at times there was disagreement, but I think, you know, this is healthy. I remember I grew up in YU. I always felt the disagreements from the Rebbeim. I was too young to appreciate it at the time. But a certain part of my life I owe to them. I could never understand. Slabotka had a problem with Mir. Mir had a problem with Rotten. Rotten had a problem with Brisk. I can't stop to tell you. You see, I had the advantage. Rabbi Ruchin Yerelik would get hysterical and suddenly he'd cut down a few of his colleagues. Others would, cast an eye askance. Isaiah Tagaret, this the way he spoke, it cannot be. They all had in common that they put down Rabbi Gerstenfeld, the one Hungarian faculty member. And this was a tremendous advantage. Why? Because as a kid who had no background. Remember, my parents can't guide me. They're American-born, and I'm guiding them. It's just the opposite relationship. It always troubled me, why are there so many differences of opinion? And I think the end result is this very class that I've been giving since 1978. You with me, Elliot? I think of the thousands upon thousands of pages I've published. All right, there's halacha, there's machshava, but boy, there is a lot of Torah history and dealing with the topic. And I think when all is said and done, what makes Aaron Rakefet is the realization that there are 12 different shvatim, and there are 12 different approaches to the Ribbono Shel Olam. And if you can't find your way among the 12, you go to the Ari HaKodesh, the Shah HaKlali. You follow me, Ben? And this is a result of what I saw in my time in Yeshiva University. Now, I don't know if that exists today. You see, I always say, a kid comes into YU, all is Rebbeim on my Archad. They wear black hats. Most of them have beards. There are a few without beards. I don't know what's going on. I'm not a student there. But it sure isn't the experience we had back in 1951, etc. Remember what I told you. Here you're an American kid, you're getting off the bus, you walk along Amsterdam Avenue, all you're thinking about is Joe DiMaggio, Ted Williams, Stan Usiel, Bob Feller, Hagadolim, and Sheba Aretz. You open up the door to the yeshiva, and it's a different world. I'm back in East Europe, Gichtaf Red in Yiddish, Gichtaf Ashtein Yiddish. There I take a look, I walk in, there's Reb Mendel Sachs, the Chofetz Chaim's son-in-law. And if I speak to him, there's the Rav, Chaim Vriska's grandson. Wow. There's Reb Shmuel Leizer Vo, Chavruta, with the Gedolei Yisrael in Telz, the Rabbi Rabinovich, Chavruta, killed by Hitler. There's Rabbi Yeruchim Yerelik. You want to know rotten? You want to know brisk? And boy, he taught me certain things I can't repeat in front of a microphone, in front of a recording. Wow. And they're critical. Wow, it's a different experience. There's Rabbi Chenich Fishman. What an individual. Azei Erlich, Kol Kach Adin. It's Rabbi Reuven Levavitz's, one of his Talmidim Mufhakim. The whole Musa movement is in his personality. You could feel it. It's, wow, what a skut I had. Yes, yes, Yomo.
Rav
Lesson. Rav Lesson. Gadlatadam. Shlabatka. And then on the other hand, don't forget this story. I'm in his house, and he's serving me tea and cake, his wife, and I make a bracha. And he says to his wife, Zeh an Amerikaner Kind, Zeh abgehit. So you see from their point of view, they were shocked that an American kid could be medaktek like that. Mitzvah. It was a great experience. I don't know whether it exists today. But this was, you see, Reb Shimla Engel, he bridged many worlds. Kabbalistic world. Don't forget that word. You'll see why. The Hasidic world. A storyteller. The knowledge. Unbelievable. And with any differences they had, Reb Meir Shapiro was overwhelmed to have him. He called him, calling Reb Shimon Engel, he's the Ragachev Gaon of Poland. These exact words. He had the greatest respect for Rabbi Engel and once said that Rabbi Engel had a mind no less than that of the Ragged Shava Gaon. Now, another story to tell you who we're dealing with. Also interviewed by a student, a footnote. The Holocaust comes upon the Jews and they're in the ghetto already. They want a daven Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. They're no magzerim. Reb Shimon Engel davened the entire davening Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Mariv Shachris Musaf Mincha, entirely by heart. Every word of the piyut, no magzer, by heart. This is who we're talking about. Kol Zman the Maram Shapiro was alive, they were no problems. They could tolerate differences. The Gadlut and Torah rose above everything. When the Maram Shapiro died, a machloket broke out. The yeshiva was taken over by a board of spiritual advisors. We'll talk about it, but not yet. And they found fault with Reb Shimla. What was the fault? He was teaching Kabbalah to students under 40. And they were murmuring against him. He picked himself up and he walked out, moved on to Krakow, organized his own yeshiva. The question of Kabbalah, this is a problem today as well. Kabbalah has been reclaimed. Can we teach it to Talmidim under 40? Delicate question. Kabbalah has been reclaimed, republished, commented upon, commentaries, translations into English. The Kabbalah Center, the original Rav and founder of the Kabbalah Center, is a Musmach of Torah Vadas. He's not a was not a fremde, not foreign to the Torah people by far. And he has, there's a whole translation of Kabbalah. I'll tell you, I'm not an expert in Kabbalah, but one thing I am an expert in, if you ever say no to a student, you push him away. And I've always lived with the viewpoint, if he wants to study something, let him study. Today the world is open. There is so much knowledge at your fingertips. All of us are part of it. I know myself, we're older, we deal with doctors, we're dealing with medicine. First thing I do, I go online. Doesn't mean I'm doing the right thing. You should have confidence in your doctor, and who are you to interpret what you see online? But this is the world today. You got to be knowledgeable. I know in Machon Gold, I made a statement, and the dean backed me up. I said, if there are five girls who come together and want to study something, we'll make the class available. And the dean backed me up. I always had a problem with Michalat, at least in my time. He never would teach the Gemara as a formal text. And there were girls that were pushed away by that. Some of the Michalat graduates are very loud in Kolech. Do I have to tell you what Kolech is? Feminist group in Israel. It's like the American Orthodox Jewish feminists. Here it's Kolech. Some of those very students, very people in Kolech are my own students. And one of them is a Hasidic Rebbe's daughters. They're low pashut. And I always felt one of them was in the Knesset yet. Not exactly a tzaddiket, as my daughter says. She's not the same as when she sat in your class, Abba. And I always felt, hey, open up the Gemara. I always felt as a Rebbe that if I would skip a Gada or I would skip a sexual part of the Gemara, the kids will go and find it on their own. Better a Rebbe teaching it and guiding them. So you see, this whole question of Kabbalah, I don't know if they were right in criticizing Shimla. Those who wanted it, make it available. Don't let them feel they're being deprived of something. You're hiding something. And he went on to Krakow. And lo aleinu, you know what happened next. Now, students described Reb Shimla, I quote, a Himmel Yid, that means a heavenly Jew, Himmel in Yiddish, a heavenly Jew who merely walks upon the earth. The story is even sadder. As Hitler comes in, they're meeting in his house, students, Jews afraid to walk out in the street. And they asked him, Rebbe, what's going to be? And he said, it's going to be worse. We can't imagine how terrible it is. The final edus we have in the death camp, they're all waiting online, and a Jewish policeman knew who this tzaddik was. He comes over and says to Reb Shimla, I want to save you. Come out. I'll push you in a place where they won't see. They won't put you into the gas chambers. And he says, Laz mitzuru, leave me alone. I want to die with my brethren. And that was the end. Murdered by Hitler. And you see, this theme repeats itself time and again of Jews that went back, could have been saved. They want to be with their people. And here you see, when Rav Chanan Wasserman said this in 38, 39, he was in America, stay here. Other stories of Gedolei Yisrael who were raising funds and insisted going back, you can say, well, they didn't realize, no one could realize. I mean, I write this in my article, that in my essay, in my, call it my postdoc, that'll be published in Chakira B'ezrat Hashem. I write this, that I quote, I give you sources. Rav Henoch Fishman, I asked him this when I was 12 years old. I was not a dummy. So we never thought it'd be that bad. Zerich Vahavtik writes in his memoir, we know Jews will be killed. 100, 1,000, 10,000. The Chmelnytsky men, but no one could ever dream, line them up, push them into the gas chambers. No one, but no one. The klala hest upon him. But here with the Shlomo, he's waiting on line to go into the gas chambers. And he still says, leave me alone. Let me die with my brethren. So you can understand, leave me alone. I don't want to be saved. I want to go together with all the Jews to sanctify the name of God. 1943. During the German occupation, Engel was taken to the Krakow ghetto. There he continued to teach Torah, wearing his talis and tefillin most of the day. His disciples made various attempts to save him, but he was deported in 1943. A Jewish policeman tried to remove him from the group, but he protested, saying, leave me alone, etc. All right. My wife said, what are you teaching today? And I told her. And I said, I still disagree with you. We shouldn't have taken one penny from the Germans. Not one penny. And I know it built Israel. I can tell you what people told me in 69. The poverty here. And oh, when we got the reparations money, we started to become a country. To breathe. Rebbe Hatzala Liyehudim B'makom Acher. We would be even greater today had we not taken a cent. But all right, we got to live with reality. We still have a way to go, a long way to go. I consider this a mate mitzvah, and I'm very proud that my lectures on Yachal, we've had response from the entire world. Am I right or wrong, Yomo? Emails and pictures and people and stories. And you know, like I said last week, Yachal does not remain. Yeah, there's a yeshiva here in Bnei Brak, you know, but Yachal is Yachal. It's not like Mir, it's not like Telz, not like Slabodka to a certain degree. But Yachal, the students, the influence, Rav Perchis Hirschman, we'll get to it, but not this term, next term, there's Rav Hashem. And then when the article comes out in Hakira, you'll see the influence of Yachal, Rav Perchis Hirschman. And some of it is very serious, and some of it is to laugh and to cry. You follow? To laugh and to cry. But we'll get there, we'll get there. Okay, so to reiterate, what did we do today? We continued with Yachal, we continued with the feeling, with Rav Meir Shapiro, one of a kind. And I love my comparison to Steve Riskin. I mean, some of you think maybe I'm wrong, Steve, or Vika. No, but there is also an entertainer, you follow me? Also a public speaker. A man could capture an audience, mesmerize an audience. I told you, Steve Riskin, you have no idea what he built in New York when he started the shul, the following he had. I told you last week, Elta, I saw old-time RCA Rabbanim sat in front of him like children licking a lollipop. He's talking, he's teaching. Wow. It was unique. All right, then he came to Israel and he's built a tremendous chinuch system here with a tremendous amount of success. No one has total success, Bisman has said. The outside influences are very pressing, very attractive. The only thing I hope is when a chadalnik or a datlash leaves, I hope he comes back. Give him 10 years to sow his oats. It's not like the Haredim who have that hatred, that anger. They write books that are just terrible, unorthodox, etc. I hope I'm right. Datlash, reach out. And though we spoke about yesterday, Rav Edelstein, the Chazon Lish, Rabbi Revel, if you read, I have it in my book on Revel, the Yusid Shiva, don't cut off the relationship. As Manazet, Satinok, Shemishba, keep the channels of communication open. And I have to say that it's Rav Edelstein's thinking, the Chazon Lish, it's influenced my own thinking. I give answers in accordance with what they say. And this Rav Riskin, how he went so left, that I have my problem with. He could have been the same Rabbi Riskin and not been in favor of women rabbis. I don't the leftists, with the reform, the conservatives, to let them, because they want recognition. They want to be able to say, we are rabbis, we help you assimilate, intermarry, but we're rabbis. People tell me for money reasons. No, for money reasons you can't sell your soul. I understand he has a large budget to raise. But in Israel we have a big advantage. The government pays. Every child, you have government support. You don't have that in America. Here you have it. And if I'm wrong about Lakewood, prove me wrong in Kamen Aliyah. Give us votes. Give us votes. Here we yet have a semblance of a world with we don't perform marriages for two men, for two women. It's frightening. And I'm viewed as a non-human being with these viewpoints. God, what happened to the Bible? I can't believe they may soon in America, I don't know, in God we trust, will be taken off every dollar bill. Reb Moshe Soloveitchik won't have a problem. Ben, you know what his problem was? With the money. How do you walk into the bathroom? In God we trust. Okay, Ben. Yeah, what did you want to say?
That's a quick comment. I think it's an important distinction. In Bnei Akiva, the kids are making their own shidduchim. They're young. They're idealistic. Right. Lakewood is in the context of the Haredi world, where the parents are making the shidduchim.
I understand.
And parents, Hungarian parents are that type, and they're into money. I just want to say that I know hundreds and hundreds. The real Bnei Aliyah are not focused on money. It's not what they're looking for. I
want to tell you,
it's important not to be critical of the Torah. It's criticism on the Haredi world.
Listen, I'm only repeating what I see on the Haredi websites, or so-called Haredi.
You know, people are disgruntled. They have a daughter. They can't find the shit up.
Yeah,
they don't look in the mirror and they blame it on somebody else. That is
okay. Halavai, you're right. With Bnei Akiva, most of the marriages, a very high percentage, work out. You see, and that takes me back to my own life story. I was 22. Malka, I know Malka for years. We were in Bnei Akiva together. It's not just I met her and married her. I never knew how much it meant to my daughters, but when we had someone visit us, a famous doctor, to look over our medical records, we paid for a house visit. My wife just went in yesterday, met the doctor, and he remembered, he was so happy. Anyway, my daughter, my eldest daughter came to be there to take notes, whatever the doctor is saying. So my daughter says to the doctor, my parents, it's not just they're married so many years, they knew each other 5 years before in Bnei Akiva, and I realized how much that meant. Very nice. Very impressive. Now, I'll tell you, a shidduch, when it's made naturally, it works out better. You have to be prepared. In other words, if you read the Alonim and you read Besheva and Makor Rishon, I'm overwhelmed by all the articles today on how to work out a happy marriage. And the basis of the happy marriage is one word that a dummy named Rav Kefet has been saying it for decades, Pishara. And I show them the Rambam, Hilchot Dishah, Perek Tetvav, Halacha Yutet, and Chav. And I touch up the Rambam, and you got to hear my lectures on it. That's the key. And see, here we have a problem in education. What does education teach you? Norm Schloss, you're going to be a Talmud Chacham. You're going to be important. 3 million Jews are going to drink Coca-Cola because you give the Hechzer on Pesach. So you see, he can walk away. He's the boss. He's the king. He's important. And his wife, what? You did that? And I was, what? Idiot. But my wife says, how come you didn't think like that 50, 60 years ago? I said, I did think, but not as much as today. Today I'm smarter. But you see, and it works out. It works out. Kanayin hara. Ani modeh l'Kadosh Baruch Hu. And there is divorce in the world. There are people who marry, and they're young, immature. But the percentage of marriages that come out of Bnei Akiva, Ezra, etc., is a very good percentage that remains strong and beautiful. And when I see these families all over Yehuda Vishomron, their dedication, their commitment, their learning, 7, 8 children, I say, wow. Our life has not been in vain. Okay? I end it there. Okay, but I hope you're right. Why I've been brainwashed by false news. But you know what I'm talking about. Oh boy. Okay. I hope you're right. All right. My dear students, first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming. Are there any more questions from the fine gentleman in front of me? Elliot, could you stick a pin into that guy, Yomo? Then it's worth doing a video of the classroom to see Yomo in action. Yomo, open it up to the world.
Recording stopped.
I see someone is looking at me who could have been Tolna Rebbe. I want to ask you, how could you... Could you tell a good story? Could you tell a Hasidic story? Could you take a Chassid who could learn 10 times more than you and he's mevatel himself to you? What do you think, David? What do you think? No, you'd have a... You are Litvak. See, you got ruined by Yeshiva University. He's shaking his head. Rabbi Dr. David Tversky. B'kolach tavin, Tolna Rebbe, Philadelphia. But David, we have one thing in common. We both knew the original, the Tolna Rebbe, your grandfather.
I say I'm a Tinok Shanishma Ben Amitnag.
Yeah, Tinok Shanishma Ben Amitnag. Good gazak. But all right, I still knew your grandfather. Yitzchak, did you know his grandfather, Tolna Rebbe, Philadelphia? No, you didn't know him. Okay, are there any questions?
By the way, I want to tell you, I thank you for responding to my question about the...
No, you asked a very good question, and I know the answer. But
right,
you,
I heard the answer.
You heard the answer. You understand why I didn't want to say it in public. It's not Lashon Hara, it's not Rechilut. Everyone knows from what happened, but we don't have to say everything. You know, I respect, first of all, I respect everyone involved in the issue. And I respect what Rabbi Lichtenstein played a role in, Baruch Hashem. But you're right that nothing equals the original translation. And you should know that the Rav, and you and I both know the Rav, was not a hard man to please. He loved the translation of Ish Halacha. Okay? And I can tell you, I'm the only one that criticized the translation. Why? Because the Rav wrote it. What was the Rav's main language that he learned after Yiddish and Hebrew and Polish and Russian? German. And if you know, I excelled in German in college. Today I can still a little bit, I can fake a ray. But the Rav wrote English like you write German. When you wrote German, you could write 50 words, one sentence. Are you aware of that, Charlie? Or you know, Charlie's aware of it too, because his parents are native Germans. And the translation, when he wrote English, he wrote like he wrote in German. He could have 50 words till he wrote a period. So when he translated it into English, the English follows the German original, the Hebrew original, which followed the German way of writing, and there are sentences there. So I asked the translator for permission when I quoted in the Rav that I can edit, I can break them down, make the English a little bit better. And he gave me permission, and I thanked him in the introduction to the Rav. So, Baruch Hashem, we answered the question. Mark, from Flatbush, I answered your question, I sent you an email, but it's not I want to, I know I'm going to show them, me and Eino Mino, the Nafkamina, I'll show them the sources, but my main thrust is not the halacha, it's the show. Vic asked a terrific question, how can I eat treif that I know there's treif in what I'm eating? And that's interesting, the Rashban, the Rush, and all that goes with it. The next week, the Bnei Yisachar, we have what to talk about. All right, are there any other questions?
Well, if I may ask a question. Did you ever hear that only 20% of Bnei Yisrael left Egypt? That was
80%. Yeah, Chamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael. So there's a Medrash Rabbah. Only 20% were worthy of living. The rest were all over there, avoid the Zara, and didn't want to pull out. And we have the same problem in America today. Chamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael. You're in touch with Friedenberg. He's coming to Israel in July. So I'm having a meeting with him with my inyanim, but just know that he's coming. And Eli Schlesberg. And he said, good, okay. I heard Dafka from both of them today, but on different inyanim, not your inyanim. All right, I wanted to...
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi, you mentioned that big shul in the Bronx with yeshiva. I think you mentioned Chaim Berlin. Was it Chaim Berlin or Chaim Ozer?
No, I went, if I said Chaim Berlin, that's when I say Yeshiva Rabbeinu Chaim Ozer on Arthur Avenue in the Bronx. And and why was it called Yeshiva Ben Chaim Moisa? Because Rabbi Garfinkel, the Rav of the Shul, organized the yeshiva there. And I'll tell you who's one. And it was never as famous as Solanter, and it didn't survive the passage of time. But I'll tell you who one of the graduates, you studied with him, Yisrael Levitz. Professor Rabbi Dr. Yisrael Levitz is a graduate of Yeshivat Rabbeinu Chaim Isa. Do you know what I'm talking about? Levitz? Rabbi Levitz? Professor Levitz?
He teaches at Gross.
Yeah, he teaches at Gross. He taught in America in, what's the graduate? Frierkopf is the School of Psychology. He taught there. He may have been a dean. And he and I were friendly, but we went to two different elementary yeshivat. And then we both went to MTA, and I'm the one that he tells his Talmidim changed his life, because I told him, Yisrael, or Irwin as I knew him at that time, you got to go to Bnei Akiva. And I brought him to Bnei Akiva, and as he says, the rest is history. Ah, my dear students, I want to thank you for honoring me with your presence. I have to thank Vic. Not easy to get here, but I saw this morning that the three of you came in together. What does that mean? You came by car?
Yeah.
Who drove?
I have a rental car.
You have a Norm, you can't go back. We got to tie him down here until we meet again next week of the last two Sheorim for the semester. And I got to ask Yomo, a group came in. Where did they sleep? Or why you group? The Kollel's still here. Where did they sleep? You don't know.
I didn't ask, but I could be in the Torah Shaga dorms, because the
Torah Shaga is ended?
Torah Shana Bet leaves after Pesach.
So Shana Bet opened the dorms, so it could be they slept there. But the summer is upon us, and Be'ezrat Hashem, it should only be a summer of Besorah Tova, Yeshuv, V'nechamot, And until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
Amen.
Okay. Baruch Hashem.